No, we're doing. Let me just drink myself stupid and I'll be fine.
Hey, good morning, good evening, good afternoon. Welcome, one and all. Welcome back to the Unsalted Popcorn Podcast. We are joined on our directionless commentary specials once again by the superstar that is otherwise known as Morgan.
Hello.
Who forgot all she has to say is hello. And we are, of course, joined by the man who's had a nervous breakdown this week because he's now got a cap. That is John.
Hello.
And we're also joined, as ever, by the wonderfully enigmatic, excited, the energy centre of the universe that is... I can't even take myself seriously with that description. Hello, Laura.
Hi.
Calm down. Let's try and, let's just keep it on the down low. Don't get too excited.
You should probably introduce yourself.
I never do. No one cares who I am. I feel like it's the live version of Margaret by Marillion, where somebody else has to announce that that's fish, and none of you care enough to say who I am. So, you know, I know my place. I'm just a guy who...
I've got massive echo on John. I can't make out a word he's saying, which is going to make this quite entertaining.
I'm getting an echo on you and me, Laura, but not on Can.
I'm not getting any echo, so I don't care.
So John can't make out what I'm saying. I can't make out what John's saying. This is going to be ace.
Ace? Did someone say ace?
No. Too soon. Yeah. Too soon. Too early.
I knew you'd work that bit out.
I can still understand everything you're saying. I've obviously got the disadvantage that I'm Scottish and you probably usually can't understand me. I can still understand you, but it does sound like you're in a cave. There's a kind of delay.
I'm back on my phone for reasons, so yeah. I've had to mock up a setup tonight, which is why look, I've got curtains. I actually have curtains.
I didn't know you had curtains. I also like the fact that apparently Father Christmas is kicking her out of the background there.
That's a red blanket.
Oh, you can't hear the sleigh bells that are currently happening over there in Morgan. Stop it, land.
Morgan's playing with the cat.
Not the time. I love the fact that she was committed to this podcast. She cared about this podcast, and in the last week, she's developed friends and a cat, and we don't care. We don't matter anymore.
Absolutely.
Teenagers, eh?
She goes off and does a podcast with the cat.
Yeah, the cats only get 9 lives. The doctors get so many more.
Yeah, Morgan's going to spend the next 9 years doing podcasts with a cat.
Laura, can I just say that you...
I think you'll find the technical term is the cat has 8 regenerations.
and then takes over Auntie Henley's body. we'll talk about that during the podcast. Laura, I just say you're looking very well. Pissed off looking kind of suits you. I don't know what it is. You've got a certain air about you. Take it as a compliment.
Well, you mean do I look serious? Is that
maybe that's it. Maybe that's it.
What's wrong?
You look good. What's wrong?
Thanks, Morgan.
Hang on.
We're doing the tooth thing.
How are the dental things?
Big gap there.
Yeah. All right, I can't even see it until you point it
really?
Out.
It's all right, nor can our listeners. But say, so, you know, carry on.
Yeah.
For the listeners at home.
There you go, Morgan.
Yeah, we can see it, yeah. This is great.
For the listeners at home,
Morgan's
I currently have...
Morgan's at that annoying stage, says, I lose a tooth, I get another one.
Yeah, kids.
Morgan, this is what happens if you have too much sugar. Don't have 4 sugars in your coffee from the age of 8.
That's probably just wise words for anyone.
Absolutely.
I just like the fact that our listeners are now wondering why we're falling about laughing as we stare into your mouth and Morgan is so close to the camera. Her nose was smudged against the screen. Anyway, right, so... when last we gathered, we were ploughing, trudging, scratching our way through the end of time, parts one and two. And it all came to a grinding halt with new floppy hair and a new face. And now we're all Matt Smith'd up. I can't remember. All I remember at the time is not having a clue who he was, and so entering into it with a kind of open mind.
All I remember is the forum was just saying, no, don't like him, he's not David Tennant.
Yeah. Which is kind of on point for the forums, given the fact that one of our favourite posters on Digital Spy forums never wanted to watch it ever again because it had changed.
Mm-hmm.
And frankly, if you took that approach, as I think I said last time, you wouldn't have got much beyond William Hartnell. So, you know. I was about to say, tell you what, before we press play on this episode, can someone tie Morgan to a chair?
Just throwing the cat out of the room.
No, cat's welcome.
In case any representatives from the RSPCA are listening to this podcast, she's not literally throwing the cat. She just opening the door so the cat can escape. Unfortunately, now she's opened the door, and rather than the cat leaving, Scott has now come in. So rather than kind of you've now got it's a cat. We've got some ginger-haired menace.
I like the fact you're more concerned about people thinking you've thrown a cat out rather than me suggesting we tie a child to a chair. So before we dive in, what were your expectations, anticipations as we approached a new Doctor?
Well, do you remember the little preview that the BBC ran with the Doctor and Amy floating in space?
No, don't.
Which gave absolutely nothing away. It was just like, here's the first look at your Doctor and companion. And that was it. They just jumped outside and just floated. And that was pretty much it. That was our like main introduction to the series. It was a bit weird in hindsight.
Wasn't it? It was taken from the beginning of The Beast Below.
Yeah.
Where he's holding Amy by the ankles and she's floating in space.
Yeah.
That was it. Yes, it was, wasn't it? I do vaguely recall that, because it had absolutely no context within the first episode.
No. I think I said last week, I've only ever seen The Beast Below once, so I'd forgotten that.
Yeah.
It's always on my series run through skip list.
I'm guessing it's not on our list either, is it?
It's not, no, because it's not a great episode.
Well, it's probably the first time. It's the first time you watch a Stephen Moffat episode of Doctor Who and go, oh, well, he's not fallible, is he? Because literally up until that point, obviously, you know, love or loathe the 11th hour, which personally I love, but a few people don't like it. Up until that point, he had a pretty good success rate.
Who didn't like the 11th hour?
I loved it, but a lot of people didn't like it.
Well, that's
the best series opener. We've not even watched it yet.
No, but that's par for the course, isn't it? Because it's a new episode, it's a new Doctor, ergo people are not going to like it.
Yeah.
But, and we'll come to this, should we just press play and then we can talk about it while we're watching it?
Go on, then.
Because, you know, just for a change, let's actually try and do what we're supposed to do on this thing.
Let's do it.
How does this work? Oh, yeah, hello, I'm me. So, as ever, dear listener, when we press play, you press play, and we will talk you through Matt Smith's first adventure with the 11th Hour, which features, of course, the culturally iconic food moment we've all come to hate. So, off we go then, in 3, 2, 1, and play. Thank you, Morgan.
You're welcome.
Well, at least there's no narration, so that's a good start. Do we normally have a TARDIS going batshit with new Doctors? I can't remember. Or is this a new thing?
This is the first time and not the last time.
That's it, yeah.
Apparently, Stephen Moffat specifically asked Russell T. Davis to end his tenure with the TARDIS basically exploded due to the regeneration energy.
So this was a new thing Moffat wanted to introduce.
Yeah,
yes, makes sense.
I think you wanted an excuse to refurb the TARDIS, which at this point, obviously, classic series aside, the TARDIS interior had not changed since Rose.
It had. Bless you. Eccleston had a different one to Tennant, didn't he?
No, he didn't.
Bless you again.
It was the same. The lighting was different. It was expanded in the. It was lighter and expanded in the Tennant era.
Ah, right. So this is the first time we introduced.
I don't think you see a wide shot of Eccleston's TARDIS interior.
Actually, you're right. I don't think you do. Do you? That's all. It's all very hemmed in.
Tennant.
Oh, so you don't see much of the. You also don't see much of the interior of the TARDIS during the specials between season 4 and season 5, and that's because it wasn't up to the standard that they needed for HD filming.
Oh, we're back to that again.
They didn't want to film Doctor Who in HD,
and then they just blew it up anyway.
Yeah,
the maniacs.
Yep, absolutely. So anyway, I don't know if you know this, but I went down to London to watch this.
Why? Did your TV not work?
I get tickets to see this in a pub in London, along with some of the stars of Doctor Who, including me and Katie Manning watched this together.
So by stars, you mean C-list celebrities who had a 30-second appearance?
Yeah.
Ah, there we go. This is the thing. This is, I think, obviously this only comes to pass, but this is the first hint we get of Moffat actually having an idea of story arcs.
Yes.
Yeah.
Which is something we hadn't really had before, and I think it is something Moffat can do well.
It is, but it didn't have to be dragged out for 3 series.
No, but I guess if he figured he was doing a 3-series run, then why the hell not?
So why not have something in the opening main scene of your new series, and then close it off with the payoff right at the end.
Yeah, sounds about right.
Like 3.5 years later.
Yep, that's one for the true fans.
One of the things as well is there are points where clearly they decided to extend it, and you see things later on in the Matt Smith Moffat run that pretty much contradict the beginning of the arc.
Well, yeah, but no one ever said they paid attention to the story arc.
Absolutely.
But, you know, compared to a programme like Lost, which I hate with a passion, at least there was one.
Yes, no, that's true. And, of course, this is Karen Gillan's cousin, isn't it?
Caitlin, I think her name is.
So she, and if you've seen pictures of her relatively recently, she definitely looks very much like her. So it's a very good casting.
Yeah, no, it was very good casting. Speaking of Lost, actually, that's the one thing I don't like about.
Because if they ever need to get the character of Amy back for something, then they're not going to be able to afford her now, so they can just get the cousin.
Yeah. Although I think there must be a part of Karen Gillan that goes, I owe everything to this show.
Oh yeah.
Oh, definitely.
Yeah.
But I don't think she ever denies that. To be fair. But I do. I find it fascinating that she's the one.
She was in Guardians the year after she. Oh, sorry, 2 years after she left. There's only that 2 year gap between 2012 and 2014. So Guardians would have been filmed the year after.
Yeah. So she basically left this and went into Guardians.
Directly from Doctor Who to Marvel.
Yeah.
You can pretty much say that out of everybody that's been in Doctor Who, Karen Gillan has been the most successful.
Without a doubt. Totally.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, look at Matt Smith's record in Hollywood. It's not brilliant.
It's not brilliant.
What's he doing?
Like his role as Skynet.
Yeah.
Terminator Genesis is fucking awful.
He's in.
Did very well on the small screen after Doctor Who, but Karen Gillan basically knocked out of the park slightly.
I don't remember Matt Smith being in Terminator Genesis. Mind you, the film's terrible and I wasn't paying a lot of attention.
He is the embodiment of Skynet.
Oh, yeah. Dear.
And of course, he was filming that while he was still in the role in Doctor Who.
Yeah.
Because we'll get to that in about 3 years' time. 3 years for us, it'll be about 2 weeks probably. But
to be fair,
young.
We are being a little bit sniffy because he is in The Crown.
Yes, and so he's very good.
His movie career may be bobbins, but he has gone on to one of the most high-profile Netflix shows ever.
Oh, yeah, for sure. This is you were talking about with the food.
Oh, here we go. Yes. This part of the reason I'm not mad keen on this is basically Tigger.
I'm fine with that.
This is just Tigger turns up and says, oh, I love acorns. I don't like acorns. I love thistles. I don't like thistles. A.A. Milne did it better.
What I will say is it almost goes on a bit too long. You know, like in comedy, you know, the kind of rule of three, etc. I mean, yeah. They go, the rule of eight.
It does feel like it was padded out because we're not doing a 45-minute episode, we're doing a bit longer. And all this sharp-cut Edgar Wright stuff. No, don't like that either. And you've never seen the Doctor eat up until this point. Have you? I mean, you never see him wandering around the TARDIS. He doesn't even have jelly babies up to this point. Modern doctors don't eat.
He takes one of the Slytherin out for dinner in the 11th episode of season one.
In Boomtown, yeah.
Yeah.
But does he eat?
Probably not.
No, you see, there you go. Effectively, the modern doctor is just a massive cokehead.
Which is why...
That's the feeling from the opening few minutes of the episode, yes.
I mean, I do like how he establishes the energy and the... No, just stop it. He establishes the energy and the quirkiness of his doctor very early on.
I think he hits the ground running more than any, definitely any doctor in Modern Who. I think he does. Obviously, you could argue that David Tennant isn't given the chance in his first episode. Really, he does in the brief time that he's in the Christmas Invasion.
Good point. I think yes.
But Matt Smith just basically goes boom.
Yeah.
Goes for it.
Just lands.
Custard, fish fingers and custard. Morgan has three days of the year where she's allowed to choose food.
Oh, God. She doesn't. No, seriously, Morgan, no.
And one time she chose fish fingers and custard off the back of this. And we had it, and it was lovely. It was actually really nice. We had fish fingers and custard. It was lovely. Tanya would eat it. Morgan, Scott and I had it. Scott had no context because he'd never watched Doctor Who. He was wondering what the hell was going on, but he loved it. And then, of course, when it was Scott's turn to choose dinner about 6 months later, he wanted fish fingers and custard again. Suddenly it's become a bit of a kind of a tradition. Mind? No, we're not having
it. I think the most important question everybody misses is where did they find fish fingers that shape? They like the shape. I never gone there, but they like the shape of Weetabix.
I'm guessing little.
Yes.
Like massive chunks.
Yep. But then you see, if they are up in Scotland, they're probably sort of from the Irish Sea, so they probably are actually genuinely the fingers of a fish.
Hey guys, you need to try fish fingers and custard. You do.
No, I don't. Really don't. For two reasons. The second one being, it'll be disgusting. The first one being, I don't eat fish.
There are two very specific reasons that Can will not eat fish fingers and custard.
I'm sorry, I do forget.
Yes. I don't like the fact that custards are left to their own devices. Little custards run around in the wild and they're all very happy. And then they get herded together and blended up and sold to humans. And it's wrong. You should let little custards run free in fields.
You should. It's like haggis.
Yeah, exactly.
A distant custard.
Little custards are actually a distant relative of the haggis. if you go the other side of Ben Nevis, there are actually fields where you'll get little haggises running wild with custards. It's true.
always assumed that the plural of haggis was haggai, but...
Haggai?
But,
what's a haggai?
Plural of haggis.
Okay.
I've just remembered at this point, we talked before about the fact that Stephen Moffat asked David Tennant if he would appear in a season of Doctor Who as a kind of bridging. And if you've read the writer's tale, Russell T. Davis makes it quite clear that he's pissed off that David Tennant considered it, because he clearly wanted David Tennant's swan song to be his swan song. However, Stephen Moffat mapped out a season 5 with David Tennant.
Wow.
Yeah. And the 11th Hour, obviously with a few very definitive differences, played out in a pretty similar fashion to this.
Well, yeah, it was supposed to be the Doctor was critically injured, wasn't it? Critically injured at the start of the episode in the crash and would regenerate at the end of the series.
Yes, that's right.
Which, given the amount of time it took Tennant to regenerate in the end of fucking time, right, an entire series dragged out as a goodbye.
Well, that's not quite the way it was happening, Laura, but
I know it was.
Yeah, it was. So it kicks off with Amelia Pond and blah blah blah. The TARDIS crashing, the Doctor popping out. He's really not doing too well. She kind of looks after him, and then he buggers off in the TARDIS. And then it cuts to what's going to happen, and I'll talk about that more shortly. But at this point, this was supposed to be David Tennant going, "Oh, I'm not feeling that great."
Yeah, but he did that for about 6 episodes before he left anyway.
He did. But the cat's been quite annoying. This is a new start of the podcast. The cat
cats are always annoying. That's just their job.
You take the elephant away.
Kept scratching. That's a bizarre thing.
I thought this was going to become a regular thing. I think it happens twice in the end.
Yeah.
Oh, I'm missing something in this close-up of his eyes.
It's quite creepy, and I've got a crack in my eyeball, so it's going to flip me out.
I don't know if you remember this as well. People kept commenting the fact that if you see the exterior of Amy Pond's house, it's only got 2 floors.
Yes.
We're on the second floor there, and there was a set of stairs leading up to a third floor. And everybody was kind of going, "There's a secret third floor that Amy Pond doesn't know about."
Well, that kind of ties in with the thing, but you're assuming they were actually standing on the first floor landing, because they just walked out of the kitchen. So they might have still been on the ground floor around the back.
Yeah, then they're on the first floor landing, and there's another set of stairs going up to the second floor.
But given the fact that the whole house just shouldn't really operate the way it does and where it is and it's an anomaly, I think you can get away with anything.
No, absolutely. People, and especially when there's a later episode, there's the episode The Lodger.
Yes.
Which is pretty pivotal to the fact that there's a secret hidden upstairs. Everybody online after watching The Lodger said, "I told you we're going to find out next week. I'm still a virgin." I was one of them. I was like, "Oh my God." I wasn't at that point because I was married with a child.
It doesn't mean anything. I mean, it's the bit I don't quite get with viewers of general TV in general.
Yeah.
Is that, especially as we are around the time of Lost with this, the story arcs, and you've had Buffy by now, and there were clues in one episode of Buffy that would play out 4 episodes down the line.
Yeah.
And Angel and Firefly played the same thing. How can people have watched more than one episode of anything, or even watched soap operas where something happens in one episode and you accept that it's followed up 5 weeks later? How can they watch Doctor Who and go, "Or that might be a clue to a thing. Oh no, I can't expect that in my brain. They haven't explained it immediately. It must be wrong."
Yeah.
Humans, mind you, then, you know, you look out the window and people gathered in Trafalgar Square to complain about the fact they weren't allowed to gather in large numbers. Twat. Moving on.
Morgan just asked a very relevant question. She said, "Who does she live with?"
Now, that's actually
important to the story arc.
That is important. And it does kind of get...
I says you were eight.
Yeah.
Was it?
Yeah.
I'm sure I've watched it recently before that.
Yeah, possibly.
It does get covered, I think, at that later point, doesn't it?
I'm getting crypto.
There was a lot of people as well that kept commenting the fact that whenever you see clocks around Amy, they were kind of hanging about half past 11 at night.
Yeah.
Or some nonsense. And there was a point where there was a digital clock that was supposed to say 12 a.m., but it actually said 12 p.m., and everybody thought that time's quite strange around Amy. And it was somebody, the conspiracy theory, that Amy left the oven on. Amy left the oven on, and the house actually exploded, and this whole season was some sort of dying fever dream of young Amelia Vaughn.
I like that idea.
It's like, oh my god. And Amy was some sort of paradox where the doctor went back and saved her when he shouldn't have.
Really?
There was a ton of stuff happening. Everyone was overthinking because he thought Stephen Moffat was going to bring something a wee bit more kind of highbrow to the show, which that he did.
Yeah, but this is the same guy who gave us Coupling.
Yeah. But I think they assumed that Russell T. Davis basically said, here's a very simple view of this Deus Ex Machina. And then they were really thinking, oh, no, Stephen Moffat's going to be more thought-provoking. And he looked everywhere. And I actually think that Stephen Moffat actually threw tons of stuff that he then subsequently decided to forget about. So I actually think that maybe the upstairs into that kind of second or third floor was actually important until he decided that it wasn't.
Yeah, no, I think there's a lot of that. Again, it's the Lost complex. You just throw everything at it.
Because Lost, if you look back at Lost, there was a lot of stuff in Lost that wasn't resolved, and there was a lot of stuff in Lost that they just kind of clearly went, ugh.
Well, I mean, it's one of the things I don't like about this episode is the fact that halfway through a polar bear appears.
He did try to explain the polar bear, though.
I'm pretty sure if you pick up a costume as a stripogram,
yeah,
you would not have police issue handcuffs. Those look normal and real.
Yeah,
I just want to say, and I'm not going to go into too much detail about this, and I can't even find my dots here, but it's actually quite easy to get off.
I mean, my one overriding thought when this scene started playing out was I could hear Nathan Turner in the background going, something for the dads.
Yeah, no, absolutely.
You know, I didn't feel it was entirely necessary. I'm not saying I was complaining, I'm a normal man, but I didn't feel it was entirely dramatically necessary, especially that shot.
I think it's very important to the whole arc. It was definitely important to my arc.
Steady. I'd forgotten that this... Yeah, I was getting my episodes confused. I like how this is, overall, this part of the story is done. I really think that's quite dramatic. And a lot of running, which is always good.
I've got one qualm about it.
Only one?
I've got one qualm about this part, and I'm just thinking, if you're going, what a waste of Olivia Colman.
Yes, but at the same time, whenever you say the name Olivia Colman, I can hear, if you listen very carefully in the background, you can hear Susan Murray scream.
yeah. Absolutely. Oh, you beat me to it. I was going to say, like, if there's one person that doesn't like this episode.
Yeah, exactly. I almost might tag her in this one just because.
I was just thinking possibly it loves this episode on account of the fact that they just had Olivia Colman decide to do next to fuck all with
her. I mean,
know your place, Olivia.
I still haven't worked out if it's just a completely irrational hatred or if at some point Olivia Colman beat her to something. Yeah. I don't know which it is.
We just know it's all leading up to one photo appearing on Facebook of Olivia Colman and Susan Murray together.
Yep.
Yeah.
It's all leading up to that. It's like John meeting Bill Nighy. It's like that.
Or
it's going to be a running gag which leads to a photo opportunity.
Or are we going to find out in the season finale of Olivia Colman's career that actually she was Susan Murray all along? I think we actually find out that it was all a big double bluff.
She's actually looking to see who likes all the comments, bitching about Olivia Colman, just goes, well, fuck you.
Yep. Because, I mean, to be fair, they've never been seen in the same room together. So, you know. Although I think that's partly a restraining order.
So of course, not going into too much detail here. So this kicks in. This is supposed to be David Tennant again, but David Tennant doesn't have a clue what's going on. So it's the Tenth Doctor, doesn't have a clue what's going on. When it inevitably comes out, when he meets up with Amy Pond again, she knows him, he doesn't know her. She's utterly confused, blah, blah, blah. Season 5 plays out, then ends with David Tennant being pretty much hurt to the point he's about to regenerate. And then from his perspective, he goes back in time and ends up in young Amelia Pond's garden.
I was going to say, that's not the time to pause. I can't see how, why or where you would shoehorn in the previous Doctor into this episode or season generally. I just don't see the point.
Basically, if David Tennant had decided to stay on the show, he would have stayed on, wouldn't have regenerated in the end of time. This season kicks off with David Tennant crash landing in Amelia Pond's garden, gets out, Amelia Pond kind of helps him out because he's not doing too well. He buggers off back into the TARDIS, disappears. Amelia Pond thinks that he's only going to be back 5 minutes. 12 years later, such and such happens. She goes, where the fuck were you? He doesn't know who she is. He's going, I don't know who you are. They have an adventure together. She starts travelling through time with him. Something happens at the end of episode 13 that involves the Doctor being hurt to the point he's about to die and regenerate, buggers off into the TARDIS, which crash lands in young Amelia Pond's garden. So from that perspective, the events of episode 13 lead into the pre-credit sequence in episode 1. But from Amelia's perspective, that's her first meeting with the Doctor.
Ah, it all makes stupid sense now.
In hindsight, this worked out better.
Yes.
Absolutely.
Totally.
Totally. But he basically had to rewrite. He had to rewrite aspects of this because he was under the assumption David Tennant was sticking around. He was actually convinced that he'd convinced David Tennant. And there's actually people that say some of the characterisation of Matt Smith in early season 5 is pretty much written for David Tennant, but he brings his own spin to it.
Well, yeah, but that would happen anyway. Because
it did happen quite a lot in Classic Who.
Yeah. Because essentially the same core character traits are underneath everything because it's the same person. They just evolve into different things, so you can copy things across. Such as, I believe, Sylvester McCoy occasionally offered people jelly babies and that kind of thing.
Yeah.
They did kind of hop back and the costumes kind of started mirroring a little bit as well as they went through post-Pertwee.
That's another reason why I really rate Matt Smith. And again, I was pretty much of the, who is this? He's 12 Brigade.
Yeah.
But it turns out he was 11. So I was pretty much in that brigade, and this episode won me over.
I'm the same because I had no idea who this floppy haired, youthful looking twat was, and yet by the end of the episode, I felt we got a fully formed Doctor. And as this series unfolds, I think I'm going to be right in saying this was an anomaly in that we didn't get a series bedding the Doctor in.
No.
If you think Tennant's and Capaldi's, especially, and Jodie's, their whole first season was just basically establishing who the Doctor was. Yeah. Matt Smith did kind of just land and go, ba-da!
Yeah. I was blown away by him. I liked him. Probably, the thing is as well, and I keep forgetting this, Probably because my expectations were so low. They really were.
That does help.
Because, you know, I was in the run-up to this. I didn't like the way the end of time ended because I thought Stephen Moffat's writing for that last scene with the kind of, oh, still not Ginger, blah, blah, blah. I thought it was really wooden. I thought it was terribly written. I didn't like it. I didn't like the couple of seconds we saw Matt Smith. I didn't like any of the promo stuff they were showing. I didn't like any of his interviews because I thought Matt Smith came off as quite unsure of who he was as a person, let alone who he was going to be.
I think he probably did. He probably still is.
He looked almost him. But I think he did more for Doctor Who than anybody else who's played the role.
I also realised...
He certainly became... I've lost Cat.
You keep distorting, my friend. Someone in your house is downloading something. Or someone here is. I was going to say, yeah, the other thing I think works really well is how quickly you establish a relationship between these two that is totally believable.
Yeah.
If you think Rose had to get to know who the Doctor was, then Rose had to get to know who the new Doctor was, and... Oh, Clara had to get to know who the new Doctor was. And there's always that...
Well, Clara had to get to know who two new Doctors were and didn't really... We've established didn't gel with Matt Smith at all.
No. But...
So Clara didn't have it for, like, a year.
No. But Amy just drops in and goes, I'm on board, I'm in this.
Yeah.
I mean, obviously, there's an element of the story helping in that she'd met him when she was eight. But as an actress, she's completely committed and on board and completely invested in it from the off, which really helps.
Again, from the perspective of going back to how he originally envisaged this, once again, Stephen Moffat's done pretty much what they did with Rose Tyler in the first episode of Christopher Eccleston, and that you saw the entire thing unfolding from Rosie's perspective.
Yes.
It was in the 11th hour as well, and even more so in the original script, despite the fact that from the Doctor's perspective, that was going to be the season 5 finale, that bit where you see in the garden
with
the Doctor to regenerate, you see the whole thing unfolding from Amy's perspective. So he does that quite, and Doctor Who's always done that relatively. You're supposed to use the companion as your kind of everyday person that introduces you to this weird mental world. Now, sometimes Russell T Davis did actually forget that. And even though he started off quite well, he did turn Rose pretty much into a bit of a superhero in some respects, in terms of it on season 4, in terms of the whole backup thing, blah, blah, blah. And he occasionally got back to it, but there was a lot of times where it actually became... And I know a lot of people complain about Clara in that regard, but there was a lot of times when Russell T Davis wrote the companion as a star and the Doctor almost as a supporting character. But the difference being when Stephen Moffat did do it, it was almost to kind of ice through the character, in my opinion. I might be completely wrong, but I always feel that Russell T Davis sometimes get carried away.
You're never wrong, John. He's always wrong. No, no. You can keep talking.
Again, I always expected her to make a reappearance. One foot in the grave woman, whose name completely escapes me at the moment. I just got the feeling the way that they wrote her that she was going to appear again.
Oh, yeah.
You mean Annette Crosby? Scottish acting royalty. You're going to lose your passport if you don't know her name.
I know.
Yeah, I do. I'd forgotten how much I enjoyed Matt Smith's first appearance.
Yeah.
I think it's one of those where, because of you remember how it unfolds at the end, and that's almost as tedious as the end of time, you forget the fun he was having at the start of it all.
And he looks young.
Yeah.
He looks very young and got old very quickly.
Yeah.
He did.
Like by series 7A.
Yeah.
Which is like 2 years time, 2 years after this.
It did age him a lot, didn't it?
Matt Smith looked a hell of a lot older.
I think it's a hard job. I think, like David Tennant, you got the sensation if it hadn't been for the fact that I just bloody knackered him, David Tennant would still be in a row.
I think it's more that he hit puberty.
I'm not sure he ever has.
Peter Capaldi as well. Peter Capaldi looked relatively fresh faced in the role for his age, and then he looked completely.
There must be something about. The filming schedule.
The long hair.
That's true. Yeah, but I mean, I know others have spoken about the intense filming schedule is really knackering.
Yeah,
and I think Tom Baker's the only one who's actually managed to sort of survive it relatively safely, largely because he had nothing else to do.
Yes. But again, you know, the thing as well, we mentioned this before, when Doctor Who hit the 80s, there were a lot more episodes than there were in the 60s and the 70s, a lot less episodes than there were in the 60s and the 70s. Yeah. Series 1 of Doctor Who had 42 episodes. You know, by the time we're getting to kind of Tom Baker, Peter Davison, it's down to about 26.
Yeah, that's true.
The difference is that when you are doing 13 episodes a series, you never get to switch off from the Doctor.
Yeah.
Because you are having to do... I mean, I would love to know the number in, let's say, any set year of media appearances that David Tennant did compared to William Hartnell. Because I'm guessing William Hartnell, one or two interviews.
Yeah.
Oh, no. For example, was going to schools, he was having to do random CBBC appearances.
Well, that only really kicked in with Nathan Turner. He kind of created that whole showy aspect of it.
Yeah.
Of having the Doctor turn up with the car and the assistant and a Dalek and a Cyberman running around in the background. And I think that kind of became part of the thing, didn't it?
Yeah, for sure.
And also, Hartnell was a grumpy bastard and he wouldn't have done it.
Would have been hilarious. Oh, yeah. I didn't catch it there because I've got everything in the way. There was a big thing at this point on the forum saying, well, what year is this set? Because Rory's, I can't remember what date it says on Rory's issuing for his medical pass there.
That's right, I can't remember either.
But this is something like 2002 or something, but this is supposed to be set in 2008, and...
That's absolutely
right. ...things were all out.
But you're absolutely right, everyone went nuts because of Rory's
date. This is like 1992 or something.
Yeah.
Well, the other question I was about to ask is, have we established where Amy Pond actually lives? Not as in the house, but bear in mind she has a very strong Scottish accent.
Well, Letchworth was supposed to be in somewhere in the like Gloucestershire way.
Yeah, because that's a definitively not Scottish village.
Yes, but they
it's supposed to be somewhere West Country.
He mentions that specifically in this episode. He mentions something about how he knows how she feels, sort of thing. Scottish village or something like that. I can't remember the exact. Yeah.
Oh, because that's the backstory, isn't it? Her parents died and she had to go to Sassenach country to go and live with an aunt or something.
That's not even quite true, because you don't even find out what happened to her parents. You just know that she lived with her aunt, and they give off the vibe that Amy's not even 100% sure, like it's kind of something vague in her mind, and of course that plays into the story arc.
Yes, of course, yeah.
Because there's little things like the fact that Amelia shows the Doctor, you know, clearly she lives with her aunt now, her mum's no longer there. You just see the scene there with the apple. Her mum used to cut little smiley faces into the apple. The Doctor uses this as evidence to Amy that obviously this is the same apple that he presented to her 12 years before.
Yes.
But then there's also the anomaly of, why was it so fresh when Amy had it 12 years ago if her mum's dead? Who cut it, you know? So from that perspective, you're supposed to be of the assumption that Amy's mum was there a minute ago, but Amy doesn't remember.
Oh. And it's a
back in time sort of thing.
Well, actually, this is where we find out that Amy actually killed her own parents.
Amy, yes, she's a sociopath.
Yep. She stabbed them with the knife that was used to carve the apple. Because actually, she hates apples.
Yep. And I don't know if we've got to, but there's a bit with the duck pond. I think the bit with the duck pond's happened already. I'm not quite sure.
Yeah.
Where the doctor says, she says, that's a duck pond. He says, where are the ducks? And she went, there's no ducks there. How do you know it's a duck pond? And of course, really, that's quite a telling line. And the fact that clearly there's stuff happening and things are disappearing out of reality, but nobody quite remembers it, but they also don't quite not remember it.
Yes.
I still remember everybody wondering what Letchworth was going to be an anagram of.
It's Letchworth.
Because why would Super Moffat name a town Letchworth? It has to have some kind of relevance. There has to be an anagram. And I think people went through an entire list of 10-letter words that it could possibly be, broke it all down.
They do know there's actually a place called Letchworth, right? They know it exists.
Does it?
Yeah. It's down there, it's in St. Albans-y kind of Luton-y Hemel Hempstead way.
Is that an anagram of anything?
Well, they're all a shit suburban commuter towns now, so...
Well, how the hell did you get shit suburban commuter towns out of Letchworth?
I'm dyslexic. Oh, that was exciting.
It was. Got some legs. Oh, right, sorry, you're talking about something else.
Yeah, no, not about being dyslexic, because I'm not. That was a bad joke. Although I might be, or I could just be really bad at spelling. But I don't understand why he would set it in Letchworth, and I'm sure Letchworth hasn't got a cottage hospital. Ironically, the person who could answer all these questions has left the room.
On anywhere.
Do what?
It's a simple town.
Simple town that has become the subject of at least 2 alien invasions.
I mean, that's kind of Emmerdale levels of rather unfortunate happenings, isn't it? One small rural community and everything keeps happening to it.
Poor Rory.
I never really warmed to Rory, I've got to be honest. I never felt he really...
You both do at this point.
No, but I never felt he really bedded in as an actor. Then
Doofus boyfriend for the first... Well, I was going to say first...
He was always Doofus.
Episodes, but spoiler, he's only in like the first 8 or 9.
Yeah, but he was basically Doofus boyfriend throughout the whole thing. And I thought maybe it was the writing that created this character. And then I saw him in Legends of Tomorrow, and it turns out he couldn't act in that either.
Oh, poor Rory. I don't mind them.
I'm not too sure how you managed to park a car there, or if you work at the hospital, why you'd park your car there.
Just Stephen Moffat being cheeky again.
Banking joke.
Hey.
Not quite as bad as Russell T. Davis and Love and Monsters, but still there's an element of...
Well, you see, it's one of those jokes I just really get bored of. I mean, even in the Capaldi's final episode, what's browser history? Oh, don't look at that. It's like, seriously, yeah. Are we still doing that joke?
What was this myth supposed to be?
Which one?
Myth on the laptop right now. The make of laptop. It was like it was leading to something. Because again, the theories were that none of this was real.
Oh, I got you, yes.
And I don't know if that ties into what John was saying earlier on about how, you know...
It was written...
There could have been an explosion or something because Amy left the gas on.
Or it was possibly meant to be...
Myth that none of this is actually real.
Yeah, could be. Or it was maybe meant to tie into the... Why is Andrew Lloyd Webber on the video call? Meant to tie into it being Tennant, and it was the thing that got dropped.
Well, there's quite a few things that happened through the Matt Smith era. I mean, River Song as well, pretty much mentioning the fact that the Doctor is a myth and a legend, sort of thing.
Yeah.
Mm.
Yeah, and I think she specifically mentions the fact he's a fairy tale. I can't quite remember when we get to it, just say, John, you mentioned that 8 weeks ago.
You think we're going to remember? I can barely remember what we talked about last week.
Yeah.
And I write stuff down. Well, to then delete it, so.
But yeah, there's definitely, it's almost like, it goes back to kind of something else I was saying earlier on, was that I feel that, Steve Moffat threw a ton of things at the wall and just waited to see what stuck.
Yeah. I do have another question now. All the greatest minds of generation, etc., are on the same Skype call, for want of a better phrase. And you have Jodrell Bank, you have NASA and Cairo. What's in Cairo that's...
Well, the pyramids were built by aliens, weren't they?
So. Fair enough, then. That's me told. Yeah, I can't argue with that. I mean, that's just science. That's a fact right there.
I mean, it's not the most outlandish conspiracy theory from the last 10 years.
It's really not. It's actually the one that arguably is more sensible.
Mm. Not even the most outlandish conspiracy theory in the Beatles.
It still bugs me that he never actually said that, but no.
No, absolutely.
How does the Jasper Carrot joke become an urban legend?
Yeah. Again.
Also, why...
The one Stephen Moffat did, and this that I'll never forgive him for, is not keeping Amy in that police uniform for the entire run.
20 years ago, back in the 80s, that would have happened.
Yeah, Tegan never moved it. It's like, I know I'm now travelling through time, but I'm going to still be dressed as an air hostess.
Yep. There are infinitesimal rooms within this small little box. They all have wardrobes in, but screw that, I'm still going to wear the same horrible purple outfit. I mean, you can argue, why didn't she go and get changed into something more practical just for the sake of 5 minutes, or at least put a pair of jeans on? When I rewatched this a while back, I'd actually forgotten that Olivia Colman was in it.
And you went, ah!
Yeah, because she wasn't necessarily Olivia Colman at that point, if you know what I mean, was she? She was a jobbing actress rather than Olivia Colman.
She's done Peep Show. She'd done...
Keep going. Else? Yeah, Peep Show, you know. Izzy Tutty had done Peep Show at that point. She wasn't in Doctor Who. More's the pity.
Oh, Morgan didn't like that much. Morgan just went off.
What, Morgan didn't like the fact that Izzy Tutty never got to be in Doctor Who, or she didn't like the teeth?
She didn't like Prisoner Zero's
teeth. So basically, what we're learning from this is I can build the ultimate terrifying Morgan caricature using... Those teeth, the eyes from a few episodes ago.
Yep.
Yep. You should do it.
I will be.
Yeah, basically, if we
and
want
when the... When I have the chance, I will just have it behind me.
That'll be scary. You've got the teeth and the face and waters of Mars so far, don't you? As possibly as an angel.
Yeah. There was just too much of this. I'm looking back and she's not said it yet, but they keep kind of say they keep, and I think they mentioned that a few times further on from this. They keep mentioning the Doctor and his TARDIS, and there's that sort of thing. And
Morgan went again.
This is also pretty shit as well. The way that those ladders crash into the window.
I want to know when the Doctor got X-ray vision and could tell exactly where Rory and Amy were, and could text whilst driving the words "duck." It's only four letters. Initially, though, the autocorrected put "fuck."
and then
where they were, could send it, and they survived.
Well, I mean one. It was a different time when it was allowed back then. But in the old days, when you didn't have a touch screen and you had proper clicky buttons, I did spend so much time texting at one point I could actually send a text message without even looking at the screen because I knew exactly how many clicks per button.
I think everybody could do that. It's just that the text message will say, I'd say, I'd like to get your bits.
No, mine actually made sense. I did once send a text message. Do it
while. It's not a talent, Carl.
Well, it was. If it is, if you can do it one-handed while going round and roundabout. although,
can't
granted,
you do it though whilst driving. Telling them to duck because the ladder's about to smash through a specific window, which he then subsequently discovered that even if they hadn't ducked, they would have still been absolutely fine because the ladder just kind of pushed slightly in.
That's true, because they didn't need to duck because they were far enough into the room that the ladder wasn't going to...
There was no need to duck at all. That's the antithesis. That's the antithesis of the scene in Blink where Sally Sparrow pulls back the wallpaper telling her she needs to kind of get out of the way of this brick. Because that actually made more sense.
I did, totally.
And less sense. It was a paradox. Stephen Moffat's brilliant.
I like that Olivia Colman actually really does just feel malevolent and evil in this. I feel like I'm being disloyal to Murray by even remotely praising Colman's work. It's that horrible quandary. But I do... This is one of the few first episode moments where I feel Matt Smith owns a scene.
Yeah.
I never felt, even when he was doing the whole waving the sword and losing his arm thing, Tennant didn't really own that. It was all a bit too cartoonish. And Eccleston didn't really get given a standalone speechy scene-y thing, as I recall. I kind of feel at this point Smith owns it and goes, he really did just land fully formed. It's quite amazing.
There's a bit coming up as well, which to me just absolutely defined that, because he owns it even when he's not owning it.
Yeah.
Because you just see that moment where everybody's just cringing on his behalf. He goes, who the man? And then he realises that he's made like a fundamental error and he owns it by not owning it. He's just shit. but he's brilliant. And to be fair, the biggest problem with this is the fact that it's very difficult for him to keep that up.
Yeah, of course.
There's a bit in the, is it the Pandorica Opens, where he does his speech to all the
characters,
and people think that's iconic, and to me it doesn't land half as well as anything he's doing in this.
It doesn't land half as well to me because I've heard Sylvester McCoy's version of it.
Yeah, no, absolutely, but even before I'd heard Sylvester McCoy's version of it, which I think's better.
Of course you do.
But I think Laura does too.
Yeah, well, two of you doesn't make you right.
Right, okay.
That's half of us.
Yeah.
Yeah, but Morgan's got the casting vote and she's on my side, probably.
Yeah, but Morgan's half the size of everyone else, so she only gets half a vote, unfortunately. That's the rules, Morgan.
Right. So actually, in terms of a voting power block, it's 2 versus 1.5.
I'm watching it without the sound.
Morgan's watching it without the sound through her eyes. Through her eyes, that's how everybody traditionally watches stuff.
I find it works best. I use my eyes for looking. That seems to be the best way of approaching the world.
I feel that Matt Smith was almost a victim of his own success in some respects, but being so good in that sense.
Yes.
I think in terms of Modern Who, he's the most alien Doctor we've had.
And actually, it's interesting you say that, because he wasn't as strong in his subsequent returns, if you know what I mean, the start of the following seasons.
Yeah.
He didn't put in a stronger performance as he does in this.
Yeah.
Yeah, no, you make a good point. And I hate saying that. I hate it when you're right.
I do think he's brilliant, and I think he's brilliant from start to finish. And Matt Smith's run throughout the entirety of New Who's probably my favourite Doctor run.
I think I may end up reviving, because I've always thought it was Tennant was my favourite, until Capaldi came along, and I got a certain soft spot for Capaldi's final season, but I thought Tennant was stronger. I think doing this, I may reappraise that, and already Matt Smith is, having gone back-to-back so quickly, Matt Smith is already, I think, stronger.
Yeah.
Partly because, as we said,
once we hit the second half of Series 7 before the film, then you'll change your mind again.
Oh, undoubtedly. But But I think partly because as we observed Tennant just kind of acting with his eyebrows and phoning in a lot during his final season, that didn't help.
I was genuinely sad when Matt Smith was leaving. I was genuinely sad when Matt Smith was leaving. And the only thing that made up for it was the fact that Capaldi was taking over. I was actually genuinely going, oh my God, this is going to be brilliant.
I was, totally. I was ambivalent about Matt leaving because I've kind of just got used to doctors leave. It's what they do. They don't care about you. So I'm always looking at who's coming in next. And I was genuinely excited at the prospect of Capaldi and what he could bring to the role. And because of how that played out, certainly in the first season,
when if Whittaker, nothing else, the speeches were going to be good.
Yeah, this is it. When the when Whittaker was announced, I was excited and then very, very, very scared because I'd been excited. Give you a parallel, and John won't understand this reference. When Liverpool signed Fernando Morientes from Real Madrid, I was made up. I was really excited. I couldn't wait. And he was shit. So when we signed Fernando Torres, I was very much kind of, yeah, but I got excited before and it didn't end well. And it turned out he was a world-class striker and he was absolutely amazing. And I kind of had the same thing with, I got excited about Capaldi and I got let down. So when Whittaker came along, I kind of wanted to get excited, but I remembered getting hurt, so I didn't get as excited. And I've learned over the years to just kind of shrug and just... Yeah.
I was sad that Capaldi was leaving, and I was excited about the potential of Jodie Whittaker.
Yeah.
But it was kind of somewhat by the fact that Capaldi was leaving. What I will say is the fact that Laura was bobbing along there reminded me that one of the things I love most about this season was Murray Gold really getting back with the music. I mean, this is definitive to me. This is one of the definitive Doctor Who tunes that isn't. Yeah. You know, I mean, obviously, yeah. You get like.
It was a ringtone on my phone for about 3 years.
Yeah, I love it. I think he does such a good job.
Just realised something. I've just realised something. Because we've been watching this in quite a condensed run, then I haven't had to have 3 years between Tennant's first episode and Smith's first episode. So it's been a matter of months. And this is basically the same climactic scene that Tennant did. He's on the roof of a building facing an alien.
Yep.
We've been here before.
There's a fundamental difference, though.
Well, yeah, he's wearing a tie, not pyjamas.
No. Yeah, but I suppose, yeah.
Yeah.
No, the fundamental difference is that he actually manages to deal with the issue in a pretty non-antagonistic manner. He almost uses his reputation to win the day as opposed to actually having to...
I'd like this bit as well. I like the callback to history.
Which is about the first time they did it, really.
It was, wasn't it? Yeah. I like the fact
that he was going to, which is something that Davis kind of left out, was a nod to the past.
Yeah, I like the fact that Moffat came along and went, you do realise there's about 50-odd years behind us and here it all is.
Yeah. And now I'm going to throw it down your throat for the next 6 years.
Yep.
Yeah. It's the way he steps through the image of a tenant, like,
yeah,
you know, it's very kind of visual. And of course, they do little bits as Laura said. Are we doing Vampires of Venice?
The
continuity error there annoys me.
Which one?
When the Atraxi is leaving, Smith suddenly turns around and goes for his pocket, and it's quite obvious when you watch it there. Then it goes to Amy, and then it goes back to the Doctor, and then he does that exact movement of going into his pocket. So it's obviously been filmed from two different cameras. It's the same scene.
Yeah.
But the continuity's all out.
Yeah, that's they didn't cut.
It's like that one scene that they just forgot to swap it for one where he just stands there.
Yeah, they weren't sharp enough in the editing or something, were they?
It's just like he goes in. It looks like he's got a really bad itch on his chest.
You hope it's his chest.
The first time?
That's right. That's where I sent the list. So, what series is Vampires of Venice in?
It's in this series.
No, we're not.
Right?
It's a couple of episodes away.
It's not on our list.
No. But there's a bit in that where he pulls out can't remember if it's a library card or something, but it's got William Hartnell's face on it.
Yeah.
Ah. Oh yes, I remember that. Yeah, that was a good little in joke. I like that.
There was quite a lot. Stephen Moffat definitely tried to embrace the past of the show. Obviously, they'd alluded to it certain times, like the Doctor sketching in his Journal of Impossible Things. You see pictures of previous Doctors in that. But
how old was Karen Gillan when she took on this role?
21.
Bloody hell, she looks a lot younger. I don't mean that in a me too, don't let me near a plant pot kind of way. I'm just getting old. But also, she's actually aged quite rapidly. If you think she looks a lot older now, I know years have passed, but from this to Guardians of the Galaxy, even behind all the makeup.
So it's... Mark just asked what age she is now. Do you mean like as today?
No, she's still the same age today because Karen Gillan never gets old.
Karen Gillan never gets old, I agree. But she must be in her early 30s now.
Yeah.
I think she's like 87 or 88, I think.
Yes.
Year of birth, not age.
I was going to say, my God, she's looking good.
Jen does wear it well.
I can't believe she was that old when she started doing this.
Yeah, I know. Can't believe someone from Scotland lasts that long, to be honest.
I'm guessing she was cryogenically frozen in a, you know, in a pub. Or she spent so long trying to work out what the plural of haggis was that she just got stuck.
Haggies.
Haggises?
I still think that the season 5 story arc is the best, you know, in terms of kind of, and I know it's part of a kind of larger arc of the Matt Smith era, but I just like the kind of completeness of it. I like how it, I just think it's very well rounded.
Yeah, it is, totally.
There's bits of it that don't, that when you look at the kind of greater arc of the kind of 3 Matt Smith seasons, again, Vampires of Venice being quite a specific example of that. They clearly didn't quite know where the arc was going, and they make some kind of errors that you can almost forgive. But in terms of, you know, how it begins and how it ends and the kind of way around it and everything, I think it just, it's, to me, the perfect arc.
Mm. Again, Vampires of Venice ruined by polar bears.
Yeah, absolutely. Morgan just hit her funny bone. But I really liked it. I liked how it all panned out.
Yeah, it did feel planned, complete, and well rounded, didn't it? Although we're probably going to get to the end and completely disagree with ourselves and decide it was shit. But
I'll fight that to the end. I think just little things like, you know, I love all the arcs, but just having somebody spray paint Bad Wolf onto the TARDIS and then finding out at the end that the Deus Ex, it just doesn't sit quite as well. Or,
no, that's it.
With every episode, or Mr. Saxon.
Yeah,
I think the end of this series arc and how the series ends, we cover all the episodes which are relevant to that last couple of scenes.
Yeah.
I think we do.
Well, you put the list together. You should know.
Vampires of Venice not being on it is actually quite good, in that there's an element of Vampires of Venice that's quite contrary to the arc.
Vampires of Venice is going to turn into our turn left of this season, and we talk about it far more than actually it warrants.
The difference being that we're not watching that one.
Do you realise the Doctor Who Spork and Doctor Who Pizza Cutter are actually based on Matt Smith's Sonic Screwdriver?
Yeah, I didn't know that.
Not that I'm a complete sucker for merchandise or anything, but although the Doctor Who pizza cutter is particularly good because it makes the sonic screwdriver sound as you cut the pizza.
I just bought Doctor Who magazine for the first time in about 3 years.
I still buy Club International. It does the same job.
It's just because they've got Time Lord Victorious ties in.
Ah, shit. Oh, shit. Do I need to buy that as well?
Yeah.
Going off on a complete tangent, by the way, you know the missing stories from Colin Baker's abandoned season? You know they made three of the four missing stories into books?
Yes.
I've only found out today that there is a specific order to read them in, and I won't tell you how geekily happy that made me. Because I have a reading list order, and I put them in the wrong order, and when I went to put my first one up on Goodreads, it told me that was book number three, so I had to scurry away and put them all again in a different order and make sure I was reading Missing Stories book number one. And I was appalled with myself at how happy it made me.
Well, I'll tell you.
Letchworth, not
Letchworth. Yeah, Letchworth is a real place. I know John doesn't believe it exists, but is that the Matt Smith dildo of the last episode? Morgan chose the wrong moment to laugh at that in the background, by the way.
Again, there was stuff here where. There was stuff here where someone online specifically said that one of these dolls looked like David Tennant.
No.
I think one of them looks like that one. Patton, fair.
That one.
The last one you see, everyone said that's David Tennant.
It did.
And they were convinced that part of the arc was going to be a return of David Tennant. And you're just like, for God's sake.
Guys, can we end the song for Fingers and Custard?
No. Fuck off.
Ah, there we go. Wow. This is the bit. I had a massive problem with that as well. The look on his face in that shot. No. Just no. Wrong. And is that New Earth?
That's... I can't remember what they called it.
Can you both do me a favour?
Yeah.
We'll try.
Could you fast forward? Just to satisfy myself, could you fast forward to... rewind, sorry, to 52 minutes and... 53 minutes. Just 53 minutes. Let's just go through the bit again that I was just talking about, the continuity error, because I want to see whether you find it, once you've seen it, whether you find it as grating as I do.
Hang on, so while we're watching the future clips of what's coming up, I can't believe we're not doing Vampires of Venice. You now want us to go back to when he's on the roof.
Exactly 53 minutes I need you to go back to.
I don't know if I can go exactly back to 53 minutes. I don't know how the timing sequence works on this. No, I can't, because I get time remaining rather than...
Oh, do you? Yeah. I'll go back to... There's 11 minutes 29 left.
I don't think Sky are that exact. I'll go back a bit faster than that.
Bill Nye.
Bill Nye, the science guy.
Oh my god, the universe is going to explode when we do Vincent and the Doctor.
It really is, isn't it? Okay.
Oh my god, it's going to be us talking about Bill Nighy the entire sobbing episode and John in the corner going, yeah.
Right, so he's now walked out onto the roof.
Just go with me. Just play it. The bit where the Atraxi is leaving. So it goes through all of the bits from the Doctor's three questions.
Yeah, I'm going to watch this little bit again because I do like watching all the flashbacky stuff.
He
gets scanned. Apologise if our listener fancies playing along. Then yes, just go back to the bit where the Atraxi scans him and pick it up from there.
Go back and just watch along and just make sure that you're seeing what I see. Because
I think we probably are, but the tie thing puzzled me. Why did he need to have three different ties?
Because he's deciding who he's going to be.
I mean, that from a man who hasn't worn one in years and can't remember how to even tie one up anymore.
So you get the hello, I'm the Doctor. He goes, hello, I'm the Doctor. Goes onto the side view in a few seconds on the basically run.
Yeah.
Just watch the Doctor.
So I've got all the flashbacky stuff. We haven't got the flashbacky stuff. I mean, we've got history, world, all the bad things that have happened.
Just
Cybermen, watch the Doctor. Cybermen, Daleks,
and then
Doctor Brace's tie. And then we get... Come on. on, give us the faces. Give us the faces. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9. Walk through number 10. There he is. Hey! Yeah. Second one to spot. Where are Rory and Amy weren't there at that point. They should have been in shot there. They should be in shot.
Yes, I see you. Lord, I'm ahead of you.
That's the other thing.
So come watch the doctor. Watch the doctor as he tracks, he leaves. Watch him go to his pockets, do a massive itch.
There we go. Massive itch.
Stops. Massive itch. And then a few seconds later, back to his pocket.
Yep.
That's great.
It's terrible, isn't it?
It is.
When you see it like that.
Yeah. That's
all the effort that's gone into the rest of the episode in terms of continuity and how it looks. And there's like, you can't notice in the other one there as well. There's like two glaring errors up on that roof.
Yeah, I think what you'll find, it's definitely an error. I think they either went back to reshoot some stuff or they shot some other things separately, such as the close-ups, and that second-hand thing was part of that close-up bit, I think. And it is a glaring balls up, and it ruins the episode for me. I can never watch it again.
I know, it's terrible. See, this, I said this was my favourite series opener, and now obviously my favourite series opener is going to have to be. I don't know, probably New Earth.
Back to Sylvester McCoy for you.
Yeah. The thing that annoys me about the rooftop scene, having rewatched it, is the fact that there are scenes at the Atraxi show. When he's saying, who's here to protect it? You see a scene of the Cybermen in an alternative universe.
Yes.
Smashing through Jackie and Pete's window. You see the time creatures from Father's Day from an aborted timeline that doesn't occur. and you see the Ood from the Impossible Planet, which technically, I know you could claim that the aliens actually have time travel technology or whatever, but chronologically that doesn't happen for about another 500 years.
So apart from two things that didn't actually happen and something that technically hasn't happened yet.
Yep.
It's all, and the itching in the pocket and the close-ups, it's fine.
Yeah.
So that
you could justify the Ood bit by saying, okay, maybe they've got time travel technology, but I don't know if they've got like technology that would show them a view into alternate universes or aborted timelines.
No, they haven't. And hang on, who are you saying has got time travel technology? The Ood or the Atraxi?
The Atraxi.
Well, in theory, they would have if they can travel across time and space. Well, they can travel across space. Whether they can travel across time is a different thing, isn't it?
I'm just wondering, like they're accessing Earth's historical database at that point.
Yeah.
And I'm wondering if they would pick something that happened on an alien planet 500 years in the future as a definition of who defines who the Doctor is when you've got access to all this kind of stuff from.
Yeah, I suspect, and I know we've talked about them before as not really featuring as much as they perhaps would have wanted. I think they were one of those creatures that everyone kind of liked. So even though it wasn't entirely relevant, and like you say, it was 500 years in the future and on a different planet, they kind of wanted to just drop the Ood in, if only because they flash back to Tennant turning up with hat, glasses, and the floral necklace to a snowy Ood planet going, oh, I've just shagged the queen.
Because they should have stuck Peter Kay as the Absorbaloth in there.
Should,
yeah,
absolutely.
As an alternative, because that's the kind of thing that we are pleased that will never be seen again. We are pleased that was destroyed.
Yeah, or a little, perhaps, a paving slab with a little face in.
Yep, just said, and then the doctor goes, run, or this could happen to you.
Yeah, that would have been much better. Anyway, while we carry on re-watching the end of this again, I think we've kind of sort of summed it up nicely, but I think, how did we, when we got to the end of this episode, without rewinding it and moaning about the continuity errors, back then as well as now, I guess, how did we feel looking forward to the new series based on this episode? Were we optimistic?
Excitement.
Did we think
excitement because there was always a chance the entire series was going to be like that. And apart from some misses, it does a pretty good job of it.
Yeah. I hear Vampires of Venice is good.
Energy that the specials were lacking.
Yes. I think that's the thing, isn't it? It kind of went back up a gear to the higher energy that we were used to.
And again, the music reflects that. Murray Gold's score in this season in particular is brilliant, and it really has that...
It's brilliant, but it suffers from the same thing as Series 4 and the specials, that it's too loud. Sometimes it's there to... It's like the perfect example in this episode is the fish fingers and custard scene, because the music is turned up a notch to give the cartoon feel.
Yeah.
To show the Doctor's quirkiness.
Yeah, because that's one of those things. I mean, I hate it when they do it in movies as well, when rather than accentuating the scene, the score is used to hammer the point home and tell you what you should be feeling.
It's pretty much been a staple of Doctor Who since New Who since Series 3.
Totally. Yeah.
It didn't happen very much in Series 1 and Series 2. Series 3, it just went boom, and it turned up a notch.
Yeah.
But I think it did give hope. Because that's the other thing, when you change doctors, as we've seen from what people say on Digital Spy, the world ends and no one ever believes in continuity and no one falls in love and it's all horrible, everyone stops watching. This did give you hope that the continuity would be good, there's a new vibrancy, a new energy, a new feel. I think it did kind of at least make you think there was more good to come.
The Coming Soon trailer as well, I think that was particular.
There are some really exciting bits in that, especially as you get River Song popping up again.
Yes, looking fantastic. Morgan?
Yes?
Seriously?
Morgan, we can hear the bells, darling.
We're trying to record a podcast here. Go away.
Sound travels.
What an heck. Right, well, it looks like we've...
Right, well, as Morgan's got bored and wandered off to play with the cat, we have season 5 now to unfold before us, and I can't remember what we're watching next. But I think of the 3 new doctors we've had so far...
4?
Oh, God, I forgot him. Of the 4 we've had so far...
We have seen multiple regenerations now. We've had 5 doctors over the course of 30, whatever it is, 2 episodes.
God, we have, haven't we? Because you forget, what's his name? Was he in it as well?
No, I've forgotten his name as well. I'm sure John knows.
The Scottish one. He was a bit good. He was a bit ace, really.
He's the Scottish one. It's like Macbeth. We're not allowed to say his name.
Yeah.
David Tennant, but 3 Scottish doctors. It's actually a disgrace when you think about it. The 7th, 10th, and 12th were all Scottish. I mean, there's a disproportionate amount of Scottish actors in the role since 1987.
They really are, aren't they? We really did go from middle class, middle England doctors to a whole bunch of Scots turning up and forgetting to talk Scottish.
We need an Irish and Welsh doctor soon.
Oh, well, you had the whole of Torchwood to cover the Welsh bit.
Yep.
And,
Welsh doctor, an Irish doctor and a Scottish doctor walk into a Tardis.
And then an anomaly happens. I think for me this was the strongest new doctor story and episode.
The barman says, why the long space?
Hey!
How long did it take you to come up with that? Well done. Excellent.
It's the most transcendental.
Just imagine if there was an audience, it'd be hilarious. Do you know what? I almost don't ever want to go back performing in front of a live audience. I kind of just like talking to you guys. It's just, I haven't got to drive anywhere and then I can just drink. It was the strongest one of the...
Screen. Got really ominous and dark.
John, she's about to kill you. Yeah. Morgan's looming behind like Children of the Corn. It's all going to go horribly wrong. Join us next week when Morgan suddenly fills in for John and the cat plays the part of Morgan. Bill Nighy.
Oh, good. I love having John Jules. Anyway.
He's the one of the dragons in this.
I can't believe it took me a second to get that joke. Anyway, right, so we've agreed we like mouthfeel. We've agreed this is a good way of the best start to a new doctor we've had yet. And we've agreed that Morgan shouldn't play with loud cat toys when the podcast is being recorded. We will be back sometime next week, and I've already forgotten what we're doing next. No doubt to point out.
We're doing the River Song two-parter, which means we get to make reference to Graham Norton again.
Are we doing it? I'm assuming we're doing that in two parts.
Yes.
Yeah.
I don't think there's a two-parter justifiably, or that we can justify doing in one go again until possibly the start of series six might be okay.
Possibly, we'll see how that goes.
Possibly, but there's nothing out of the ordinary now for a while in terms of like, yeah, we need to do this all together. So
yeah,
that is an excuse to daytime drink.
Because you need an excuse, John.
I was trying not to mention that.
Well, you know, some of us decide to only drink when we're recording the podcast, and then John decides he needs to get some practice in at lunchtime. In the meantime, this has been the Unsalted Popcorn Podcast, Directionist Commentary, Doctor Who Special, What's Me Doo Doo. And over there, she's gone, and was Morgan, and is John.
Bye.
And over there, now hiding behind her hair and still in her hat, is Laura. And we will be back sometime next week with the next episode. Till then, bye-bye.
Bye.